Welcome to New Human Living Radio Show, bringing you powerful interviews to awaken the power in you. Learn more at newhumanliving.com. And now your host, Les Jensen.
Hello and welcome to the show. I'm so glad you could join us. I think we're in for a treat tonight. Our guest is Jenny Lee and the topic is True Yoga. But I just wanted to take a moment and talk about your role in life, both from a personal perspective and from a collective perspective. You are here to be you in the simplest sense. Just by being you, you're fulfilling an aspect of why you're here. All of creation is intentional. You would not exist if you weren't intended to be. And this can seem like really simple banter, really simple dialogue, but oftentimes our ego can really get in there and self-doubt why we are here, self-doubt our talent, self-doubt our gifts, and we can really end up playing ourselves small. So when we take the time and understand that all of life is a manifestation of divinity, of love itself. I like to think of love as the fabric of all that is, or the fabric of the universe. So just by being you, just by listening to the show, you are fulfilling a very core aspect of why you're here. And the rest of it, what it actually looks like, what choices you make, your decisions, are up to you. You know, nobody's ever really broken a karmic law. We're given fierce freedom here to play ourselves big or small as we see fit. You can't really do it wrong. You might take the long road, but in the end, we all make it back to source. So relax and know that it's divine that you are here. It's divine that your journey has been what it has been. So many of us are old souls that have played out so many train wrecks over such a long period of time. Our egos don't have anything to hang our hat on. There's no sense of self in our story that has any semblance of divinity. But one thing I've noticed on the show is that when you talk to powerful people, they tend to have pasts that have challenged them, and very often in a very deep way, in a way where they were so far in the darkness that even the notion of light existing, let alone being available to a personal experience, was not even considered. So if you're going through struggles now, there's so much upheaval going on now. If you feel like there's this energetic turmoil within your psyche, relax. Well, what do you mean? Chaos, relax. Yes, relax. The truth of you is untouchable by human intention. The truth of you transcends any condition or problem. You're here to discover that truth, rediscover that truth, because the truth of you is timeless. It's out of reach of anything that can happen in our human experience. That's my story. I'm sticking to it. Let's get to our guest tonight. I've talked to Jenny Lee a couple of times now, and I'm so delighted to have her on the show. She wrote the book, True Yoga, Practicing with the Yoga Sutras for Happiness and Spiritual Fulfillment. She is a certified yoga therapist and has shared the healing benefits of classical yoga and meditation with hundreds of clients over the past 17 years, helping them overcome anxiety, depression, grief, post-traumatic stress, and challenging relationship dynamics. She coaches private clients via Skype internationally, applying yogic wisdom to life's challenges. I want you to join me in welcoming Jenny to the show. Welcome to the show, Jenny.
Hi, Les. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing wonderful. I'm so glad to have you
Me
on the
too.
Show. Thank you.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
So you wrote a book about yoga.
I did. Yoga has been my path for over 20 years now. And taught a lot of this stuff and lived a lot of this stuff, tried to figure out how to live it at least, and am still in process of that every day.
Sure. Well, here in Boulder, Colorado, there's yoga studios all over the place. And if I were the untrained eye just observing, I would notice people walking into a building with yoga mats and walking out with smiles on their face. How would you describe yoga?
Well, you know, the outer presentation that you're describing is what most people are familiar with. There certainly are yoga studios on almost every corner in America these days. And I think people do come out smiling from their physical yoga practice, you know, to move our bodies in all the different shapes and ways that we do in a yoga class, really liberates the energy flow in our physical bodies. It also liberates and releases a lot of the stuck emotional stuff that we all walk around with. And I think that's part of the smile that you're seeing when people come out. They feel a little bit lighter and freer. And, you know, my book, True Yoga, is not about the physical practice of yoga. It's about the inner practices, which are based on the Yoga Sutras, which is an ancient text of spiritual teachings that outline the ways in which we can really live and breathe our yoga practice, not just when we're in the yoga studio on our mats, but also every day, all day long, with our families, in our workplaces, as we're at the grocery store, as we're driving in traffic, just, you know, what are the principles that are going to bring us to that smiling, happy place that you're describing all the time. And that's the point of why I wrote this book, because I so many people are suffering. So many people are just feeling the heaviness of life in all different ways. And we don't have to. We don't have to suffer as much as we are. It's not to say that we're not going to have challenging days and moments, but we are. But there's ways to work with that, with those states when they come, so that they don't submerge us.
Sure. So, what would you say differentiates true yoga from perhaps some more traditional yoga that's taught here?
Well, I would say that, you know, the material that I'm outlining in true yoga is traditional yoga. It's classical yoga. The Yoga Sutras as a text are one of the most classic, oldest texts attributed to a sage by the name of Patanjali over 2,500 years ago. So they are older than many of the texts which are being used in yoga teachings today. What defines the classical teachings is that they are primarily geared toward meditation, and that the physical practice that's so popular in the West is really just a tiny, tiny aspect of what gets us ready for the ability to have transcendent experiences in meditation. I'm not even talking about spiritual awakening here. I'm just talking about transcendent from the standpoint of being able to transcend our anger of the moment or our sorrow of the moment and just find peace.
Well, that's pretty powerful right there. I mean, you mentioned in your bio that you're helping people overcome anxiety, depression, grief, post-traumatic stress, and challenging relationship dynamics. When you look at how people can be in a cycle of perhaps emotional reaction and mental stigmas and dogmas that don't really necessarily support them as an individual, how would you describe yoga and true yoga as a tool, as a process, as a path to really finding a sense of true and lasting help with those types of stigmas?
Sure. Well, maybe I'll start with a little personal story, because I was in a process of studying traditional psychology, and at the same time I was practicing yoga, and I was pregnant at the time, pregnant with my first child, and so my physical practice really took me through that first pregnancy. But during my second pregnancy, there were some challenges with the pregnancy, and I was faced with some really tough decisions about bringing a potentially handicapped child into the world, and or potentially losing the child and at birth, because she wasn't predicted to make it. And so although my physical practice was helpful, it didn't really help my mind enough wrap it around that, you know, prognosis with this second pregnancy. And so I started studying more of the deeper teachings of yoga, the philosophical end of things, and, you know, what the yogis had to say about who we are and why we're here and what this whole journey of life is about. And, you know, many of the things that you mentioned in your introduction to the show today are so in line with those yogic teachings in terms of knowing that we are so much more than whatever problems or difficulties are on our plates at any given moment. And so, you know, to just finalize the story about that pregnancy, the baby did pass just before birth, and as anyone can imagine, that was a huge loss and a very, very sorrowful time for me. And it was my ability to know that through my yoga studies that soul was not gone, that she was just in a different form. And that although I didn't get to have the joy of being her mother in this lifetime, that I didn't have to be as sad as I might have been if I didn't have the understanding that we are all connected at a soul level, and that I could find peace again, and that I was meant to find peace again and love again and, you know, be joyful again. And that I didn't have to define my life by that loss, although, you know, I grieved that loss. So when I have clients come into my yoga therapy practice in, you know, with whatever they have going on, they're feeling huge anxiety about their life and the state of the world, or they've had a significant loss and they're feeling depression and sorrow, I dig into my yoga toolbox and I share things with them that I used myself in going through that experience. Practices of controlling my mental energy and my emotional energy through the breath, certain breathing techniques, spiritual teachings that are within the Yoga Sutras that just really help me understand the bigger picture of life and to make peace with the things that were out of my control. I think anxiety for a lot of people is just because they feel really out of control. And when we can make peace with the fact that we're not meant to be in control, we're only in a little bit of control. We're only in control really of how we are moving through the experiences that come into our path. And so we do have control over our reactions and our responses. And that's where the yoga practices are really powerful, because they give people tangible things to reach for when they're feeling anxious. Okay, I can do this breathing technique, and I can calm my breath down. I can lower my blood pressure. I can lower my heart rate. And then once the physiological response has been addressed, then they can start to do some better positive self-talk and overcome those negative, you know, thoughts that are sending them way, way out into the realm of feeling totally overwhelmed and out of control. And then once we've done, you know, once we've addressed the physiological response and we've done better inner self-talk, then maybe we can do a little physical movement just to release any emotional tension that might be kind of blocked in the body. And then eventually I'm going to direct everyone towards a really basic practice of meditation, which, you know, everyone experiences as challenging, even myself, but the ability to move into stillness, deep, deep stillness, is what enables us to connect to a love and a peace and an energy that is far beyond what is buzzing around in the outer world. And it enables us, as we connect to it, to get to a place of harmony within our own beings that then we can walk back into our outer lives and manage much better.
So when you think about your own personal journey and as you've progressed through life, how has these practices for you changed how you experience life? I mean, like a before and after, what kind of... Go ahead.
Yeah, so I mean, I am self-admittedly a type A individual by nature. I'm a doer. I want to be in control. I love to organize and get things done. And you put a task in front of me and, you know, it's going to happen. But that type of personality also lends itself to a huge amount of frustration and the tendency to be really reactive, really trigger happy, if you will, towards the states of anger or snappishness or just, you know, anxiety, if you will, if you can't control things. And of course, we cannot control things all the time. So the yoga practices really have allowed me to shift to being more of a witness to my own inner experience. So although those impulses might still arise within me, I don't act on them. I feel them rise up. I watch them with compassion. I choose consciously whether or not to, you know, listen to them at all, or whether to just gently place them back onto my yoga mat and make a different choice. So it's just the practices have really enabled me to slow down, to be less reactive, to be more conscious in my choices of how I respond to people and situations.
So we've been talking about the effects of yoga. What would you say are some of the common misconceptions about yoga?
Well, I'm hopeful that this main misconception is shifting. But really, over the last two decades that I've been in practice, I've seen a predominance of focus on the physical side of yoga, meaning the yoga postures that are found in all the yoga classes that people might go to. A lot of the imagery that we see out there of yoga is, you know, beautiful women with skinny bodies and the fancy clothes on beautiful mountaintops and such. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's just that it's not representative of the entirety of what yoga is. It's only representative of the tiniest fraction of what true yoga is. So I would say the biggest misconception is just simply that yoga is a physical practice, that it's an exercise form or something else, you know, something to be utilized as commercialism, really. We're seeing a lot
right.
of that. But yoga, the word yoga means union. And the union is the union of our individual awareness with the great cosmic consciousness. And so all the practices that comprise true yoga are meant to bring us back to that state of union. And of course, just doing some beautiful postures in a yoga studio is not going to bring us to that state of union. It might bring us a better body, or it might bring us a little peace for that hour, but it's not going to get us to that total state. The practices have to include the lifestyle practices, how you walk in the world, how you talk to yourself and to others, how you approach the spiritual end of life, and how able you are to integrate not just your physical self, but your mental self, your emotional self, and your soul self.
So if I want to work out my body and I go to the gym and I put in an hour, when the bell dings and I'm done, that's it. I walk away. I'm done with it. But it sounds like you're suggesting yoga goes far beyond the yoga studio, where you go and do an hour of yoga. You're not done. Is there homework, or I mean, how do you embody what happens the other 23 hours? I mean,
yeah, well, you know, everybody's going to plug into this material in a different way. So I like to say yoga will meet you where you are. So I totally understand the people who just want to go and get a nice workout. They get strong, they get flexible. They do movements that maybe they wouldn't do if they were just lifting weights at the gym. It's a great cross training practice. All of that is highly beneficial. And I actually started with a strictly physical practice as well. I was not introduced even to the philosophical end of things until much later. So I understand when people enjoy yoga for what it brings them on in terms of physical benefits. But to answer your question, the other 23 hours of the day, if you want to be truly practicing yoga, the entirety of what yoga is, then yes, we're going to start to get into, you know, some of what are called the yamas and the niyamas. These are the practices that we employ throughout our daily lives. Practices like choosing to be peaceful, choosing to tell the truth all the time, to have integrity, choosing to be content with what's in front of you rather than constantly following the next desire. Practices like generosity, self-control, right effort, simplicity, purity, all these kind of qualities that we have innumerable opportunities to practice. It's not just like we get to practice it for this 5 minutes with this person. It's going to be this 5 minutes with this person and the next 5 minutes with the next person and on down through your day. I mean, this is a 24-hour a day, 365 day a year practice if you want to make it such. And what I've found is that the more I bring these teachings into play in every situation of my life, if I'm running the list of the 10 yamas and the niyamas in my head, these qualities that I just started to name, am I choosing the most peaceful response here with, you know, in this discussion with my 17-year-old? Am I being 100% honest in this communication with this colleague? Am I choosing to cultivate simplicity in my world, or am I choosing to just satiate the next desire in terms of trying to get a little fill of happiness? You know, what minor sacrifice might I make now to really enhance my long-term journey back to knowing what's really true, what is really authentically good in life?
So you've mentioned, it sounds like almost a pivot point in choice, where you highlight the idea that you're making that new choice in the moment. You're making a new choice in what would have been a unconscious choice. I mean, the monkey mind can be quite a scoundrel, quite a scallywag. How do you, I mean, if you're not, this sounds like you're bringing change in the other 23 hours of the studio. What kind of a practice empowers you to that new choice if it's such a pivotal factor in whether you can make change in your life?
Right. That's such a good question. So what practice enables us to make these conscious choices is what I'm hearing you ask. Is that right?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. So as I said earlier, what these yoga sutras are pointing towards is the practice of meditation. So it's kind of circular in a way. It's not linear. So there are these lifestyle practices that I was just speaking about. which enable us to get to a quieter place within, so that we're not, when we sit down on the meditation cushion, we're not as monkey-minded as we might have been if we were just allowing our habits and our impulses to kind of drive our days. But then circling back around, it's the daily meditation practice which enables us to make those conscious choices. So it's kind of like one supports the other, supports the other, supports the other. And you can't really have one without the other. I mean, you can partially. Everybody's in process. So you do the best that you can on any given day. Nobody's expecting anybody to be perfect. But it's just about kind of having the guidelines set out. These are the qualities that I'm trying to live into. And then I have my daily meditation practice, which helps me observe my mind, look at the ways in which I'm making choices that aren't honoring these qualities, okay, and then just observing that with compassion again, not with self-judgment, but just a noticing, so that then the next time when I'm off my cushion and I have a choice at hand, I can have that much more awareness of, okay, yeah, I chose in a way that didn't support the practices that I know I really want to live into, like peacefulness, truthfulness. Let me make a different choice now. Like, have that awareness, have that pause. So a daily meditation practice, and that can really begin as simply as carving out 5 minutes a day to just sit and breathe and watch your inner landscape. And over time, it will build, and you can just trust that process. Whenever I coach people on establishing a meditation practice, I know how hard it can be, and I just tell them to start with a baby step. Just create the habit of stopping every day for 5 minutes. Get in the habit of doing that, and then you can build it into a more expanded practice with, you know, more techniques and all of that. But it's really about creating the habit of being willing to stop and pause and be self-reflective and start to witness the nonsense of the monkey mind.
It's always a very powerful thing to do when you take time and attention to learn more about who you are and the aspects of yourself. I really like that. So you're talking about true yoga as a vehicle of developing more harmony and balance in your life. You mentioned there are 10 lifestyle practices. Can you describe those for us briefly?
Sure. So I've gone through a couple, and I'll repeat those. So the choice of being peaceful, and that can really be a doozy right now, because I know when I sit down at the dinner table with my husband who's had a stressful day and my 17-year-old who's stressed out because he's applying to colleges, and then, God forbid, politics gets brought up, the dinner table is anything but peaceful.
Right, yeah.
So it's like, I'm just giving that as an example. Everybody's got their examples. But, you know, we take whatever situation's in front of us that is not peaceful, and we go, how can I bring peace to this situation? You know, how can I embody peacefulness within myself? Well, that is absolutely going to start in my own thought, because if I get all worked up about my political view that might be different than my son's or whatever, then an argument's going to ensue. But if I'm practicing peacefulness intentionally, then I'm going to say, hey, how about if we talk about how you're doing on that college essay instead of politics right now? Or, you know what, it's okay if we disagree. I love you anyway. And so it's just making those choices to move towards the quality of peacefulness. So that would be an example of how I might utilize or how I might embody that first quality. The next one is truthfulness. Again, truthfulness, you know, I think a lot of people think that they're honest, but the person they're least honest with is themselves.
Right.
And so again, it begins within. It's like, look at your own way of making choices in your mind, or the way in which you communicate and how you formulate what it is you're going to communicate. Are you communicating something that's kind of around the side of truth because you're trying to get your way about something? Or are you speaking really authentically about your feelings? So it's just self-assessment all along and then bringing that out into the world. The third quality is generosity. And again, this isn't like giving some big donation to your favorite charity, although if you have that ability, that's wonderful. But generosity can be as simple as taking an extra moment when you're standing in the grocery line and you're about to get your groceries, and rather than blowing off the person who's helping you, actually look them in the eye and say a genuine thank you or a genuine, how's your day going? You're being generous with your energy, generous with your time, generous with your attention. And so those simple moments can really profoundly make a difference. I had this particular example happen one day. I was at a Whole Foods, and there was a young kid helping me, and he looked so unhappy. And he didn't even look up. He didn't acknowledge me. He looked like he'd been out too late the night before and was just miserable at his job. And I waited until he did look up at the very end, and I just said, "How are you doing today?" And he brightened up, his whole face just like lit up like a light bulb. He's like, "Well, I'm okay." But I could tell that he was just thrilled that I had actually, with genuine concern, taken that moment to ask, you know, and so
right.
Being generous with your time or your spirit. The fourth one is self-control. We could talk about that forever. We're all driven by our habits and our addictions and everything else and the things that are just the easy default button. But self-control is practice, you know, it would be applied to maintaining awareness as we go through all of these practices, choosing to do these higher level teachings. The fifth one is appreciation. Again, same thing. It's so simple to say, "Hey, I really appreciate you, you know, putting my fruit on top of the bag rather than at the bottom." And little things mean so much. The sixth one is purity. Purity sounds kind of biblical, but really it's, I think of it more as simplicity, kind of scaling down. We live in such a consumptive society and time that it's really hard to not be the continual consumer or intake person of all the media, all the social media, et cetera, et cetera. So how can we kind of just simplify, purify that inner landscape so that it gets a little less cluttered? The next one would be contentment. And that doesn't mean that we don't strive to improve our circumstances, but it means that we bring a level of acceptance or just okayness with the moment, because if we can't do that, then we really can't make change in the future. There's that compassionate acceptance of what is that needs to be there. The next one is right action, and I really love this one because right action sometimes is no action. So sometimes people need the spark, and they need to really, you know, move it to move it into action. But I know for me, the type A, sometimes right action is no action. It's like, no, take a break, pause, do a restorative practice, breathe.
How can you discern what's right or not if there's something in front of you that eventually will need action to be fulfilled? How do you know when no action is the right action?
Well, I would take that right back to meditation, because if you have a regular meditation practice where you're just witnessing your own inner thoughts and impulses and emotional waves, then you're going to know what is impulsive reactivity and what is intuitively guided action. If you don't have that, then you're probably going to act impulsively or act habitually.
You know, for myself, I just want to comment on that, because I was going to make some changes to my webpage, and every single time I'd go to make the changes, I felt no energy. I mean, it's like my inner momentum stopped, and I'm like, well, this is curious. I'm going to need to get it done eventually. And yet every time I went to try to engage the process, there was just no joy. There was no elixir within my being to get it done. And within a couple of days, there was a snafu with the website and all the content was lost and even the backup was lost. So everything I would have done would have been lost. And it just wasn't meant to be. And so it's that mindfulness, perhaps, when you're tentative enough within your own being that the right action might, I really like what you said, right action can mean no action. I mean, we're in such a goal-oriented or, you're measured by what you have done type society that I think that's a very powerful aspect. I didn't want to sidetrack too much, so keep going.
No problem. I think that was a really good point. And I think that, I don't know a lot about your personal practices, but you're obviously a conscious and self-aware person who can discern the difference within your own being. Like, is this just laziness that I don't want to do this work on my website? Or is this some sort of inner impulse that's saying, yeah, this isn't the right time, or this isn't aligning with my joy or my highest good here. So let me just let it sit for a couple of days. And I mean, what a beautiful example that your intuition was kind of nagging at you. No, don't do this. Don't do this right now. discernment is, I think, how we determine right action. Discernment and listening to intuition, both of which are built through meditation practice. The ninth one is self-reflection. And this one is great and multi-layered because obviously we've been talking about self-reflection or self-awareness all through the show today. But this is beyond just personal self-reflection. It's also reflection on the divinity within, which is something that you spoke about at the beginning and something that many people don't really understand. You know, they don't know what it means that they're a divine being. And so you tell them that there is this higher self or this divine essence that's within them, and they kind of look at you with their head cocked sideways, like, okay. So this practice in yoga, the Sanskrit word is swadhyaya, but the self-reflection is really to open ourselves to the possibility of knowing this divine essence within and approaching things that guide us towards that, like reading sacred texts. And for somebody who might be coming out of a religious background, that could be studying the Bible or reading some other religious manuscript or anything that defines what that divine essence is, and just reflecting upon that and going, this is within me. Okay, how do I experience that? And one of the questions that I love asking clients is, how do you experience that which is greater than you? And because, not everybody has a religious framework for that. Some people will give me a more religiously oriented context or understanding, and that's fine. Some people will say, I experience that thing that's bigger than me as like the energy when I'm out in nature and how I just feel more expansive when I'm standing on a mountain or by the ocean or something. And so however somebody experiences it, this is that self-reflection process. It's the, let's get in touch with that essence that is way bigger than our personal little histories. And then the last one is devotion, a personal favorite of mine because, and a difficult one, I think, for a lot of people. We are very self-oriented, the small self, that is, self-oriented in our culture. And to be devoted to something greater than ourselves is not necessarily something that people think about all the time. Certainly those who are religious will think about being devoted to God or to their guru or however they experience the divine or the deity. But devotion can just be devotion to that inner quiet, devotion to your your practice of coming to sit on your cushion and inquire into the stillness. It can be devotion to love itself, which every human being knows on some level. It beats in our in every heart. So devotion as a practice is so, so sweet and can be experienced in a lot of different ways by people. So those are the 10 lifestyle qualities or practices called the yamas and the niyamas. Yeah.
That's a very comprehensive list. I like it. So when you think about the clients that you've had over time, can you share with us a few stories? Because I'm thinking about our listeners, about how can this practice, how can true yoga make a change in my life? Can you share an example or two of what you've witnessed?
Sure. I've been asked this question before, and I always kind of hesitate because I don't talk about clients much, but I guess it's all impersonal.
Well,
and
reserve their name. We'll call them John Doe.
You know, one client who I've worked with for quite a while was going through a deep, deep period of anxiety, paralyzing, actually. She was unable to drive, work, really leave the house much. And so we worked together for quite a while, and really what was at the base of it was this quality of truthfulness and the fact that she had just been so on the go in her life for so long, just on the fast track to corporate success or, you know, mission of work, that she had really lost touch with her inner truth. And that was starting to show up as anxiety in her physical body. It was manifesting as a lot of different stress-related disorders in her body, this anxiety in her mind that became paralyzing. But at the root of it, it had some really, really deep threads of how she wasn't being honest with herself about her relationships, her personal goals. And so as soon as we got her to come home to that inner truth, she was able to make changes in her outer life that brought harmony back in pretty quickly. And, you know, again, these practices aren't going to make your life just become 100% perfect. Human life is challenging, point blank. But now when I know that when she encounters things that are really difficult for her, she knows how to check in with herself, tap back into that center of truth and inquire about what the right course of action is, and that she's committed to be living that for herself so that she doesn't get back into that anxiety state. Gosh, another example. Let me see. I had a client who came in with a lot of anger issues. Anger is an interesting one because, from my understanding, anger is really desire that hasn't been satisfied. Not that we're meant to satisfy every desire, by the way, but that it comes from that. And so it's really looking at what was beneath the anger. Anger was causing a lot of disruptions in his life. And so we looked at, again, truthfulness, you know, just being truthful with yourself and what lie beneath the anger. Because a lot of times anger is not just what it's going after on the outer level. There's something much deeper. Anger at self, lack of self-forgiveness, and it can go way back into the past. So rooting out those things that really keep us from being in harmony with our true self, and our true self is harmony. It is peace. It is love. And that is the state of being that we're all meant to be in. And so I often say that yoga is the practices of yoga are the practices that move the obstacles out of the way so that we can get back home to that state of peaceful being.
Life is such a wonderful thing. To be carrying around anger or anxiety or whatnot can really drain the sense of joy or happiness of your life. On the cover of your book, you talk about happiness and spiritual fulfillment. How would you describe, there's short-term happiness, like, woohoo, I got a good parking spot, and then there's long-term happiness. How does true yoga reflect on that?
Well, we're a happiness-seeking society. Every advertisement out there is selling you happiness in one package or another. And people really kind of, if you were to watch yourself on a daily basis, and I've done this exercise myself, where you watch how the mind jumps. Oh, I want coffee now. Okay, well, I've had my coffee. I want this now. I want that now. And we go from want all day long. We want this. We don't want that. And we just pleasure seek, really. And it's not that we can't enjoy pleasures in the physical world. Of course we can. They're here for us to enjoy. But it's the attachment with which we enjoy them. And so if we can't be happy without them, then we're assigning our happiness to that outer thing. And true happiness is the quality of joy that is within our heart that is maintained regardless of whether we're getting the thing that we want on the outside or not. So, for instance, right now, I'm having the joy of being audited. And I can't say that experience makes me happy. But if somebody was to ask me, are you happy? I would absolutely say yes, because I know myself as a happy, joyful person on the inside, no matter what's going on. So whether I'm in a fight with my son or I'm being audited or I didn't get the parking spot or, whatever, I'm still happy because my happiness is the joy that I am connected to my higher self. I'm connected to God. I'm connected to the love that is my being.
Well, very nice. Well, let's shift to your platform. Can you share with us what's it like to be a yoga therapist? What does that entail?
I am so blessed. I get to work with so many wonderful people. I live in Hawaii, and that's a blessing as well. And so I work primarily by phone or Skype with people, depending on their preference, and offering this counseling for all different types of people and circumstances and things. And so it's really diverse. It's wonderful to wake up every day and get to talk to different people going through their own personal challenges, but to see them making awesome choices and changes and coming back session after session and saying, I tried that thing you told me to do and it really worked and I didn't react as much, or I just had such a better week. I didn't feel so stressed out or whatever. And so that's awesome. And I've been doing it for a long time. And in addition to my personal one-on-one work that I do with clients, I also lead a yearly retreat. I have a retreat coming up in Mexico in February. And that's a lovely time to get away and do some deeper work with a small group of folks. There's only a couple spots left on this coming one, but it's going to be down in Puerto Vallarta, Mexico, south of there. And there's all the information is on my website.
So when if I'm a listener and I'm looking at engaging your services, how would you describe a typical session?
Yeah. So if someone wants to explore what yoga therapy is and how it might benefit their life, the first step would just be to either call me or send me an email introducing yourself and what's going on. We'd set up a time for a short phone conversation possibly, or we might communicate on email to just, you know, talk through a little bit about what challenges you're facing and how yoga therapy can help. And then if that feels like a good fit for the client, then we would set up a time to connect on phone or Skype. And my sessions are about an hour to 75 minutes. And each session is different. So I start by, just as any type of therapy or counseling process, the client is the leader. They are going to start by telling me what they have going on. And then I would offer counsel and suggestions as to yogic practices that would help them with whatever they're struggling with. And then we would practice those together, and they would get homework to work on between our session and the next one. And I offer email support in between sessions. If somebody has a question about one of the practices that we've done, they've forgotten something, I'll respond and help them through it, or, you know, anything that else comes up.
So who would you say is your ideal client?
My ideal client is anyone who really is serious about wanting to make positive change in their life. Anyone who wants to get happier and is willing to do the inner work to become happier, because I know that happiness is available to everyone. I know it. But people have to do a certain amount of inner work, and it can be fun. It can be challenging, and you got to be ready. So I think the readiness, the willingness to be authentic, to be honest with yourself, and to know that you will have to apply yourself to the process, but that you'll get great results and you'll feel so much better. So
I mean, we've talked about happiness and spiritual fulfillment, but what's the end result of this? I mean, if you practice this over a period of time, I'm in a daily practice over a considerable period of time, where does this take you? I mean, what's the end game, if you will?
Well, Les, what is the
end game? That wasn't that funny. Or maybe it was.
You know, that's a big question. You threw me a big one right at the end here. But really, what people can expect is to have a more peaceful, balanced life, a more peaceful inner landscape. I think one of the places that people struggle the most is in their own mind. And so if you can be more peaceful in your own mind, that is going to absolutely translate out into having a more peaceful life on the outside. And I'm not going to promise anybody enlightenment, although the yogis would. The Yoga Sutras will. So if you want to work on the Yoga Sutras at the highest level, then absolutely the end game is full-scale enlightenment. But, you know, one step at a time, and I think most people would be happy with feeling a greater sense of peace on a daily basis.
Well, very nice. Well said. I like that. Well, you've written the book True Yoga. What do you hope people take away from reading your book?
A couple things. I hope that they take away some tangible tools to work with on a daily basis, because every chapter has in it some practical exercises, and also some self-reflective questions, and also some affirmations that really help them integrate the material and continue to support themselves as they make it a part of their lives. So I know that they can walk away with those tangible tools if they choose to use them. In terms of a big picture message, what I hope they walk away with is just an understanding that they don't have to suffer as much as they are, and that there is a road to peace and happiness. It's well within their grasp, that they have support along the way. I'm here. I take on clients all the time, and they can reach out and ask for some assistance along the way, and that they are beautiful divine beings. As you said at the very beginning, my message is the very same as yours, Wes, that inside each one of us, there is this glorious, glorious, love-filled divine being, and that we are meant to come home to a knowing of that, and that these practices that I share through the yoga path are one way of doing that, and it's a really life-changing journey.
Well, you know, the compassion of your heart is quite evident in your words and your actions. It's clear that you wholeheartedly engage this practice of true yoga, and it's reflected in your voice and your actions. I'm so delighted to have you on the show. Thank you, Jenny Lee. I really appreciate it. Thanks for being on the show.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Les. I really appreciate you asking me, and it's been delightful talking with you, and so nice to know that there are other like-minded individuals sending the good message out there to people to love and cherish themselves and one another.
Very nice. We've been talking with Jenny Lee, the author of True Yoga. You can get her books on Amazon and through major booksellers nationwide. She's also having a retreat, as she mentioned in the show, in February of 2017, and she provides private coaching, and you can tell she's so genuine and sincere. I encourage that. You know, when you work through your stuff, we've talked about anxiety and stress and anger and grief. When you take the time, and sometimes that doesn't happen until you are so frustrated with your life that you're motivated for all the wrong reasons, take the time to realize who you are as an individual. When I think in our human story, the vast majority of us have had such a personal dogma, if you will, a personal perhaps sense of struggle as far as what it means to be a human being, that in the past, the sages, the gurus are the exception. But my hunch is we're coming into a new chapter. We're coming into a new story of our human potential. And when you take the time through services like Jenny Lee has talked about tonight and work through your stuff and get clear about who you are and why you're here and awaken that deeper wisdom, that deeper sense of connection to life within your own being, that it creates a doorway, it creates an opportunity, it literally creates a space in your thoughts and feelings for your heart and soul to show up. And I tell you what, if you want to fuddle with something that'll kick your ass, play with love. Love is such a powerful elixir that if you just, with a simple practice of verbalizing what you love during the day, it might be the morning sunrise or the smell of the coffee in the morning or the waggle of your puppy's tail. When you embody love, you change not only your story, but you change the whole collective story. Every time a human being transcends a condition of the past, it makes it easier in the collective consciousness for another person to do the same thing. Well, you've showed up for the show. You've listened to it. Here we are coming to the end, and you're here with us now. I appreciate that. You know, it's my good pleasure to bring you powerful guests like Jenny Lee so you can discover the power within you. It's been my pleasure. I'm Les Jensen. Thanks for listening.
This has been a New Human Living Radio broadcast to bring your soul's inspiration into effect and live your life wide open. Check out our host, Les Jensen's latest book, Citizen King, The New Age of Power, at newhumanliving.com. Thanks for listening.